While we're just all moving, I'd just like to say you've heard a lot about the conference, in inverted commas, and you've heard a lot about the Freud Museum. And so if you weren't there, you might be imagining that the conference was at the Freud Museum, when it wasn't at all at the Freud Museum. It was at the Courtauld Institute of Art in the University of London, the alma mater of Erica Davis, and our director, Michael Kaufman, had allowed it to be there. And one of the things that was really super for me was that I didn't have to pay. One of the things that is a problem in psychoanalysis is, of course, paying. And the tickets were enormously expensive. I mean, in 1994, they were something like either 60 quid or 100 quid. So I think that on principle, I wouldn't have gone if I hadn't had a freebie. But of course, I volunteered myself to be Derrida's host. And this, I already knew him, as I explain, which is another reason why I thought I was justified in being his host. And this led to all sorts of things. I'll just get out my papers. Of course, I took copious notes, but archives need archivists, and my notes are in a plastic bag in the top of my loft, although I can visualise the white notebook that they were written in. And although my talk is going to be rather personal, but it's going to be very Freudian and I hope very relevant, I hope you won't think it as egotistical, but rather as another symptom of the event and of the event's archives. So first of all, in one way, this was a moment for me as host to see Derrida not only on the scene, but behind the scene, and have some physical proximity with him. We also went to the Ivy restaurant afterwards, my first and only trip to the Ivy, in which I made jolly sure that I sat next to him. Because in one way, this is a kind of both actual, in terms of his presence, and virtual love story or love poem, if you like. Because basically, I find great intellectual power extremely aphrodisiac. And I don't think I'm the only person to do so. And I found, I mean, I was very, very kind of trembling all the time. Obviously, I was a young scholar in Derrida's presence. I don't say young student, I say young scholar, because I've been teaching at the Courtauld for over 10 years by this time. So first of all, I've got down here loft, desire. I think I've talked about loft and desire. The third point is, to me, in my practice as an art historian and as a writer of art history, words are always already autobiographical, and this brings up, is very pertinent to this relationship with Derrida. Could I have the next one, please? I met him because I'd written a paper in a conference which was published here, Portraiture Facing the Subject, but my text was called Rembrandt Genet Derrida. Could I have the next one, please? And it started in the Whitechapel Art Gallery, when already quite into Jean Genet. I found a tiny, weeny little book called, this is my translation of the French, not actually what the book was called, it was worse. What Remains of a Rembrandt When Torn into Regular Little Squares and Flushed Down the Toilet. I don't like saying toilet, flushed down the loo. It was something horrible in American, saying Jake's or something horrible. It's quite interesting as an example of a desire to escape the archive, to tear up your text and flush it down the loo. This led to a very interesting adventure for me, and finally the deconstruction of Derrida's Gla, where he puts Genet against Hegel, but seeing it in terms of the text Genesis, not as an interpretation, seeing Derrida pitting himself against these two people, one representing the law and the institution of which Derrida was also part, and one the criminal, the outlaw, the very sexualized person, the anti-institution. But the thing that was interesting for me when I wrote the text was to discover to what extent Derrida, as a man of the word, had completely suppressed everything visual in the text, including the primary encounter of Genet looking at Rembrandt, sometimes in Kenwood House, just down the road, which is amusing, which is how, as well, I started the text. But Genet is going to be important to memory, the question of archives, so don't think he's there as a red herring. So I was interested in this autobiographical reading and in the question also of blind spots. And when writing up my conference paper, I was on a scholarship in Paris, I had a very strange phenomenon which was just at the end, and it was like a huge effort. I had this thing which I knew about before, which was very rare, rarely happens to me, about once every 5 years, where you have migraine zigzags and you can't actually see what you're writing. And I thought it was so Freudian that I kind of was so excited by this weirdness that I wrote a letter to Derrida saying, here is my text I just finished, but I'm just having this incredible moment of blindness. It seems too good to be true, blah, blah. Anyway, in the end, he invited me to, this is all relevant, to the Latessia Hotel, his hangout. And I got to know him, and I think later, by possibly even email, he pointed out that I'd made two Freudian slips, at least two typos, which I, of course, are always Freudian slips, in my text, in the footnotes, each of which is relevant to the memory of the question of archive. One was writing the word hymen for him with an extra E in it. You can't believe this, and that could I. And the other one was that the exhibition he'd already curated, called Memoir d'Aveugle, which is translated as Portraits of the Memoirs of the Blind, whatever. I always, even to myself this morning and in the draft I re-procured of my text, say Visions of the Blind. I think it's because I can't even think what memoirs have got to do with blind. So I always call it Visions of the Blind. So then I hosted the conference, which I've told you about, which was exalting. I sent him a book I'd published, which he then sent me a thank you letter for. And every time I had about three letters. Every time I picked up a letter in the very public space of our formal letters, I blushed because I was so moved that he was actually relating to me. However, next slide, please. Of course, this was a Memoirs of the Blind. And the thing about the Rembrandt and Jenny thing is that Jenny looked very much like Rembrandt. And it's very strange how this kind of soft nose and everything goes straight into this portrait, which isn't that. This is the cover of Memoir d'Aveugle. If I could have the next one, please. The point was, as you all know, but everyone's kind of skirted around the amazingly important point of Derrida's text, was that we already heard, when we knew that Yerushalmi wasn't coming, that, well, as I understood it, the presence of Derrida himself at the conference had freaked out Yerushalmi so much that he'd lost his voice. Yeah. So he was actually a non-visible person at the conference because of this extremely freaking out and shocking experience. Now, when I heard Derrida's text, all I can really remember of it is how shocked I was by something else. Because basically, Jean Genet is linked to notions very important in Derrida's own work of theft, mostly of betrayal, and of mourning. If you think of Genet's text, Pompe Funèbre, it's about funeral rites. And I think Genet is very important for Derrida. And so what basically happened is that in the middle of, basically Derrida stole the most important revelation of Yerushalmi's book, which is to do with the father giving the Bible, but the father giving the Bible, which proves that Freud obviously read Yiddish, otherwise his father wouldn't have made the description in Yiddish and everything. The point that I found very shocking for me was, having had this personal experience and thinking I was, as a young scholar, having some kind of meaningful communication with Derrida, however humble, and he was notoriously kind to students, the point of the thing was that, as you know, he made a link, and I have a very visual imagination. This kind of took over a lot of other things that other people were saying. There was this link between him describing the vellum, the parchment, which is human skin binding the Bible, and this whole business of circumcision. And then to me, the whole of the rest of his talk was all about circumcision, but what circumcision also meant in terms of filiation. And you have, of course, in the Old Testament, Genesis, Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob. In the New Testament, in Matthew, you have Abraham begat Isaac, da-da-da-da-da, up to David, the Temple of Solomon, finally Jesus Christ. It's one of these topological analogies. And really, Derrida's whole discourse, whatever his fratricidal or not relationship with Yerushalmi was to do with the fact that the word was passing through an entirely male lineage which had appropriated the word begat, which excluded all begetters, It takes us back to him versus Hymen. There was absolutely no place for women in anything of this, no place for desire, the act of love, giving birth. It was entirely, as you can see, a thing, and I put here the performance of the impossible. So to me it meant that his performance signaled to me the impossibility of any real communication or participation in this entirely male lineage. Of course, I was not only female, but I was also not Jewish. And there's also, even in Holocaust studies, where a great many magnificent women writers are there, although I've also been involved, because, as you may know in Yerushalmi's book, he bases it on Maurice Halbach's. And I was a friend of the artist who drew Maurice Halbach's in Buchenwald, and Maurice Halbach died in Buchenwald. So there's a funny thing going on there. So I felt this powerful sense of exclusion on the one hand, and on the other hand, you might find this rather amusing if we could pass on from Yerushalmi. In fact, I was consciously thinking, not when am I going to get him to myself, but when am I going to be able to show Derrida the archive upon which he is talking? Because the whole of the Courtauld Institute, let alone the fact in its new home, which was the former seat of the Royal Academy of Arts, with all the Royal Academy salons, with our painting collection and so forth, was based upon a very, very grim photographic archive, the first in the world, divided into dark green and bright red files for art and architecture, which is now a kind of paper museum fossil. And he was never able to see this. And of course, I was thinking not only of the very weird little fusty lady archivists we had in there, but of figures such as Anita Bruckner, who'd been extremely miserable in our archives, Phoebe Poole, who'd been in love with Anthony Blunt and committed suicide when the archives were her major environment. And to me, the question of archive was always to do, as I just finished my PhD, with the pain of the archive. It had nothing to do with the later translation archive fever. So in this sort of pain of the archive way, I was also terribly miffed, if we could go on to the next one, there was this sense of exclusion. I then, sometime later, went to Strasbourg Cathedral and, of course, was enchanted to discover the figure of the synagogue. The classical figure of the synagogue is, of course, a woman representing synagogia as opposed to ecclesia. I sent Derrida, this is a postcard, who is blinded because she doesn't realize that the New Testament is where it is. So she is the Old Testament who is blinded because they don't realize that the real Messiah is in the New Testament. I didn't get any response from this postcard. But of course, it's also, if you like, a sort of image of the blindness of the female. I thought of something else to say, but I'm sure I'm exceeding my time. So as well as that, if we could go on to the next image, my great pain, I wanted to end with these women things, was I could not show Derrida, the queen of the Courtauld Institute of Art, Manet's Barbe Folie-Bergère, because he didn't have time, because he was whisked off by psychoanalysts, when of course it's one of the most important, you know, things in Western civilization, the beginning of modernism. He would have loved to see it. And if we can go on, the point is, Michael did ask me how this played out in contemporary art. Almost immediately afterwards, I had a very strange encounter. In those days, travel to Poland was expensive and impossible, with the artist Sophia Kulik, on whom I was supposed to write, and part of my essay was called Memory, the Question of the Archive. When I spoke to her, and I said, well, it's really going to be very expensive, can't we do it by writing, by email? She said, you must come to my home. She picked me up in the snow, and this is her. Incidentally, you can see how she's in a kind of both mandorla, but vaginally shaped enclave here with her spear of truth. If we could go on. The fact is, I went to this crumbling 18th century house on the outskirts of Wrocław, which is a complete archive of the memory of the whole of Polish conceptual and performance art, where her particular text, if we could go on, was about Hestia, the goddess of hearth and home, who is also obviously female, very interestingly linked as she strides through columns to Freud's Godiva in some ways, but the goddess not only of catastrophe, but prevention against catastrophe. She's the origin of the Scottish widow in insurance and things. She's actually used as a sign of fire insurance ever since that began in the 18th century. So if we could go on, the actual exhibition that Sophia did, as well as this Hestia-inspired piece, was called From Siberia to Siberia, from S-Iberia. These are all shots she took with a very simple camera off the television. To Siberia, which was the name she'd seen on a trip to the latest cyber cafe. She thought it was an incredible Freudian, of course, thing that there was Siberia and Siberia. These holes in her photo constellation actually relate to the idea of women's work and kind of Polish women's embroidered tablecloths. So it was a huge constellation of things in which her insistence, as I come to her archive, this female archive governed by Hestia, was very important. If I could just have the next one. This is a later picture of me, a Polish friend, and Sophia Kulik in her female archive. And if I could go on to the next one, please, which I think is... And of course, when Derrida actually published Mal d'Archive, it had what's called in French a prix d'insérer, which is never ever in, which means please insert, which you put as a band at the end of the book, which of course wasn't translated, which wasn't about archive fever as in enthusiasm. It was about the end of a century in war, catastrophe, injustice, the role of distorted archives, dirty dossiers, dodgy dossiers. I finished the text on Sophia just after a very severe bombing of so, and of course, I was going to say it's to Safa Fathi that we owe the most beautiful, sensitive film of Derrida, in which he's shown going to the synagogue his father took him to read the Bible. And then if we could have the next, this is a kind of thing about the female. I think this is a very moving image of him on, you know, in, without an archive. You see him back in his native land or on the beach, and there is actually no archive. He's of course got his little book, of course, because we feel very, very scared without our words to hold. But he's actually back to the land. If I could just end, in my book, The Visual World of French Theory, where I wrote about his relationship with Valerio Adami, I kept trying to keep in touch with him. But when I heard he had, I was going to meet him in Irvine at a dinner, but he flew back just as I was flying there. Another, you know, rendezvous manqué, because he'd heard that his wife had got cancer. When he had cancer and didn't reply to things, I thought, this is obvious, he doesn't want to be bothered by somebody like me. But I didn't realize he was going the whole time to Valerio Adami's summer school. So this is his last summer school with Valerio Adami, which I could have gone to myself. And this is where he gave the unpublished in English text about fear and trembling and signature and dying, where his hand is shaking. This is a beautiful late photograph by Dennis Massey, where the blur is about all those things to do with dying. So I began with a very beautiful Derrida and ending with this very poignant photograph. But I just wanted to say it's long, and thanks to Michael's and all the Freud Museum and Ivan, everyone's a resurrection of this event, which we hope to add to, or I don't know, do something with at the court or two. It's a continuing adventure. So thank you very much for the invitation.